Right now it is time for the Berkshire Edge On Air. You can find the Berkshire Edge, of course, berkshireedge.com on the web, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can find them right here on a Wednesday morning and also rebroadcast later on during the week here on Robinhood Radio and on demand at robinhoodradio.com. And we welcome in Marcy and David. Good morning.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
All
right. A cold morning.
Ever since you guys went to the opera, things have gone downhill.
Yeah,
otherwise,
things have gone downhill ever since.
I really hope David liked it.
So stay away from the opera for the next month.
Yeah, right.
Since then, we just barely reached 20 yesterday.
Did you get up that high?
We were in the city and it was actually 27. But,
well, you should have stayed up here. it was like 6.
It was terrible. All right.
I didn't go out at all yesterday, actually. Today I have to go out to some meetings, and I am not looking forward to it.
Well, what's a good...
I'm wondering if my car's going to start.
Oh, dear. Yes.
Just wait till the sun's hit it for a couple hours, then it'll
start. Yeah, right. I can't.
All right. Well, we'll go right to your list of topics that we have here. The first one is really related to the weather, and it's one of those accidents that's just really a tragedy that happened that killed the Lee, Massachusetts woman and her son.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's... I don't know what else there is to say about it. We had a call from a local merchant, you know, who said that this had happened and that these people were very well known in the community, and two women and their son, and a truck slid, apparently. I mean, it's a box truck, whatever that is, and because of the icy conditions, couldn't stop and rammed right into their car.
They were on Interstate 684 near Bedford, New York. And they were in traffic, and he just couldn't stop, and he slid right into them. So.
And these are two women who were well-known in the community.
One of them worked at Bard College, at Simon's Rock, at the Athletic Center. So a lot of people knew her from there. And her partner was a graduate of, Monument Mountain, and a star basketball player who scored 1,000 points during her career, and went on to the Basketball Hall of Fame, and she was working at Berkshire South, the regional community center. So
they were well known.
Yeah, well known.
So it's going to be. I mean, the thing is that we can measure how many page views we have, and when something like this happens, it really pulls the community together, because we had something like 9,000 people reading the story yesterday.
Yeah.
So, you just know how much the community is affected. And it's interesting. I mean, that is one of the interesting things about running an online newspaper, that, we can see immediately what the interest is in a particular news story. And this one certainly,
struck a chord.
Especially in the holiday season.
Well,
we'll go from that to something that will lift our spirits. And that is the Bamboozled Berkshires column from Carol Owens.
Oh, jeez. Yes, well, Carol Owens writes a column for us called Connections
every
Tuesday. And she and I got talking about scams that have happened over the years. And she said, oh, well, I'll write about that. So she has some, she collected a series of, just a few of the many, I'm afraid to say, that were swindles, actually, on the Berkshires. And there was for instance, the National Music Foundation, which was one of the more, I remember that very vividly, and reporting on that. This organization, backed by, supposedly, by Dick Clark, the entertainer and the American Bandstand entrepreneur, was going to take over the campus of what is now Shakespeare and Company in Lenox and turn it into a retirement home for musicians. That was their, and they got lots of money from the state and lots of praise from local officials and business people who thought this was going to be a splendid way to revive what was at that point a kind of derelict campus of another swindle, which was Bible Speaks.
I remember the Bible Speaks.
Remember the Bible Speaks? Well, you know, there's something cursed about that property and in Lenox, and except that I think that Shakespeare and Company has done has
broken the curse.
Broken the curse, I think. It's sort of like the Red Sox winning the World Series. You know, it's finally broke that curse. But in any case. So she recounts these various swindles, and there may be some going on right now. Who knows, you know?
All right. Well, with that, we'll go to not a swindle story, but this is an interesting story that the developer has got new partners, and it looks like the old Eagle Mill and Lee will be developed.
Yes, it does. Jeffrey Cohen, who... finally acquired the property or his development organization, and he's partnered with a firm from Vermont that will actually try to build out the moribund derelict Eagle Mill, which is right behind Joe's Diner. People know where that is in Lee, and along the river. And it'll be a residential and commercial complex, and it looks like if it actually comes about, and it looks like it will, it'll be a really nice. It's going to have a marketplace, a food market in there, and it's going to be quite a center. And it's a good, you know, that's what you have to do with properties. Some of these old mills that stand empty for so many years, they have to be turned into, they have to be redeveloped. And it's a risky business, but I think Cohen seems to have gotten all the pieces together and all the historic tax credits that go with it. Hopefully the new tax, he will have avoided the new tax bill that Congress just passed, which I think somewhat restricts development such as this, but we'll see.
But this will be very exciting. You know, Lee, actually, the town of Lee, if you haven't been through it lately, has become very charming. I remember it 20 years ago when I first came to the Berkshires and rented a house actually it was 25, rented a house near Lee that it was kind of run down and quiet and, you know, had a few weekend people hanging around, but it was really kind of, you know, a kind of derelict little town. And now it's really adorable. I mean, the main street is lively, and at least in the summer, there are hanging flower pots all over the, you know, all up and down Main Street, and there's some restaurants, and it's and this is going to be this is going to make the town really, you know, revitalized even further, because it's going to bring people to live downtown. There have been a lot of complaints that the small Price Chopper grocery store, which had been right downtown, is closing, and probably because it's got competition from a brand new and very big Y grocery store, which is a couple of minutes outside of town. And Jeff Cohen is going to bring a grocery store right back, you know, sort of a grocery store and food emporium right downtown. So it's, you know, we're seeing this now. I mean, Great Barrington is having restaurants and a new apartments and a new co-op built right downtown, and now Lee is going to have the same thing. And this is going to make for very lively towns. We're very excited about it.
Right. Now, the only thing is, if Connecticut would please come up with $100 million so that we could have the train to New York.
Right,
come right
coming
up
through our towns.
Coming through our towns. I mean, you know, it's up to you guys, okay?
You know, it's funny, in Connecticut, there are people in the towns, in Cornwall and in Kent, that are anti-train, simply because of the way they were treated when the trains came back, with just total disregard, which our new state representative, Brian Oler, has already focused in on that, getting some legislation passed which puts a little control on cutbacks and things like that. The state of Connecticut spends an inordinate amount of money on transportation. And what we're facing here with the decline in school population and everything else, and residents leaving, is simply this would be an investment not only, as you said, in Northwest Connecticut. People would be able to contact New York City and further south. They would be able to live in the area. They'd be able to transport back and forth. And it's a vital section for us if we're ever going to get people moving back in here.
Well, yes.
And young people here as well, professionals who have kids and who have the income to pay taxes to help subsidize the services that we need. So that's
that's our feeling too. And you know, I think not to spend too much time on this, but you know, we have been hoping that there would be a train service. The proposal is for the Housatonic Railroad to connect with the train at Danbury, go through, you know, Northwest Connecticut and up into, you know, to Sheffield, Lenox, Sheffield, Great Barrington, Stockbridge, Lenox, Pittsfield, so that you could get on a train in any one of these towns in Massachusetts or Connecticut and go right to New York. And under Duval Patrick, the state of Massachusetts set aside their $100 million to make this happen, but Connecticut didn't. Now, obviously, Connecticut is not seeing the benefit to themselves.
And also, the Connecticut, to be fair, is suffering from a bit of a budget problem.
Connecticut also spent about $50 million putting in a bus path between Hartford and Meriden, which is totally not being used. But that's a subject for another
day.
The
whole thing is,
I want to go on to your next story because, once again, when I was in high school, I was taught you can act global but think local. And your next story is exactly that. With the book called Collusion, you got a review of that book, which was being discussed earlier this week, not only on NPR, but also on a couple of talk shows on TV as well.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
No, we didn't know that.
Well, it's written by a Guardian reporter, from an English newspaper named Luke Harding, who reports about just putting together the pieces of the puzzle of how Russia insinuated itself into the Trump election campaign to get him elected, he makes a very persuasive case, as our rather long review points out. And it's in fact this particular story about this book, and it's not a very long book, by the way, for your listeners. I mean, it's about 100 pages, so it's a short book, but it's interesting and timely. But it's one of a series of articles that we're doing, is looking at the various figures in the Trump administration and their machinations, let's say. So this is the second or third piece in this series. So look forward to our next one in this series, by the way, is going to take on Jared Kushner. So you can look forward to that.
Now you've got an article by someone who works at Community Health Programs.
Right.
Yeah. Notes from the front lines of healthcare coverage.
Yes, it's very interesting because you know, all this talk about the Affordable Care Act, but this man actually works in at community health programs, enrolling people in the Affordable Care Act, and he wrote this, you know, in the height of the enrollment period for us, and talked about, you know, how important it is for so many people to have access to health care insurance and who these people are. I mean, they're not, you know, welfare people or deadbeats and, you know, who want the state to support them. These are working people, middle-class people or lower-middle-class people who are trying to get some health care and, you know, and who are, you know, jumping through hoops in order to fill out these applications. And he describes a number of them. And what he and his fellow counselors have done to help them sign up for health insurance. So it really does bring, I mean, like, you know, the collusion, I mean, it does bring a national issue down to the local level, which is what we always like to do.
I think, yeah, and well, that makes it more understandable for people.
Yes, yeah.
Well, community health programs is really does a dynamite job of assisting people who really need this kind of encouragement and assistance in navigating the, you know, the kind of bureaucratic requirements that to join such a thing and get enrolled in the ACA. And, you know, it's interesting to see how many more people are signing up, despite the fact that, you know, the Trump administration has been trying to discredit the program and, in fact, you know, eliminate it. So, by the way, it really puzzles me. I just don't understand why they are against it. I mean, it's like...
Except that it's Obama's.
Well, that's the reason, thinking of the people who need it.
That wouldn't be the first time or the last time.
No, but, you know, I always wonder, what kind of a world do you want in which people don't have access to health care?
Well, when everything
and are going broke.
Can I just say?
When they get sick.
You don't want that. But in a politicized world where
right.
everything that, you know, where certain rights are politicized, you end up with conversations like this. And it's really.
I know. Well, I mean, I understand policy. I don't mean to sound naive, but really, I mean, when you look at what happens when people get sick and they can't have any access to health care and they're going broke or
well, what
or
happens
bankrupt.
Is they go to the emergency room.
And they don't
and
pay the bill.
And they don't pay the bill.
Right.
And
that or is they it has all kinds of, you know, implications yeah. for... You know, education for everything in our society. You know,
and you have various lobbies and insurance, and you know it just becomes complex. So Marshall's going to change the.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to another topic.
Well, we only have about five minutes left.
Yeah,
I want to get onto the last two. The Start Talking by Bell Fox Martin.
Oh yes, she's terrific. She wrote a little column, a little piece for us called "Start Talking," and what she's saying is, she's actually a minister, in addition to being quite a great writer and artist, and she illustrates her little pieces and the illustrations are quite wonderful. But in any case, she's writing about why we're not talking about the opioid epidemic that is striking the Berkshires, and she says people should got to start talking about this and openly. Because she said it's just it's an epidemic and it's very destructive, and she makes a persuasive case for that, and she's right.
How right she is! It was singled out last year when a per capita death rate for the use of opioids came out in Connecticut. North Canaan made the top. I think made the top 10 in the state
wow.
of Connecticut.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, of course, everything reports those opioid deaths report to you know to Troop B and through like that. But still, that was a shocking thing that brought about Representative Brian Oler holding community meetings on this exact same thing. It's a crisis, and this goes along with your health care, which you're talking
right.
about. You can't run ad campaigns. You have to put boots on the ground in health care to alleviate things like this.
Yeah, well, she points out that drug overdoses are the leading cause of death for Americans under the age of 50. I mean, that's pretty astonishing.
And it's not. It's no longer black males under 50. White males under 50 have now really taken on the lead in this. It's absolutely staggering.
Well, actually, it's funny because there was an article in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago that the opioid crisis, which had originally or had up to now been mainly a white community issue, is now also reaching into the black community. But you know, the interesting part of it is that this was, you know, everybody thinks of drugs and blacks. I don't, but
no.
people do.
That's a natural perception.
This has been up to now a white community issue, but.
Well, it is a white community.
Well, it is.
Just think about we are a medicated society, in a way. I mean, people are taking all kinds of drugs.
And the doctors are responsible.
They're prescribing them. But it's also, this is the funny part. It's a medical problem. It's not a funny part, but it's also a part of the economy. Who's being affected most by lower wages, lower ability to get jobs and to keep jobs? That used to be the parlance of a minority sector in this world. Right. In this country now, it's not. It's white men around 50 years old that have been downsized and been out. It all ties in with healthcare and the economy.
And it's also
Marshall. You know, what do you do with people who are in that situation? You sedate them.
That's what I'm saying. That's the bad thing. And
what what do you do? You inform people. You show the sadly, you've got to show the big picture so that people get on it. There's an industry there. It's like when you say let's take money. I'm jumping topics, but when you say let's take money out of politics, you have to look. There's an industry. There's a pharmaceutical industry that is based on keeping these things for sale.
As I always said, I went with a friend to an Alcoholics Anonymous or meeting, and the speaker, when they concluded, said an amazing thing. And this is what this country doesn't realize, and what our politicians don't realize, is that he said it took me 3.5-4 years to walk into this forest of drug addiction, and you know what? It's going to take me at least that long to walk out of this forest. And this country has not yet addressed that problem monetarily, medically, or anything. And
worse, it's been distracted into thinking things can be dealt with instantly with a pill.
Well, but it's not only 50-year-old black men. No. It's also anybody
who's had white pain and
women. I mean, teenagers.
It spreads.
You know, and I mean, the number, because, again, I mean, this isn't from us, but I remember seeing something on 60 Minutes a couple of months ago where they were interviewing these, you know, young, fresh-faced high school and college students, all of whom had become addicted to heroin because they had had accidents and pain, and they were on opioids, and then they couldn't get any more opioids, and so they switched to heroin.
Marcia, you're going to be really quick. When you were growing up, was there pain the way that there is pain now? Because pain's now a thing.
Yeah, no, I don't remember there being pain like this. Right.
Well, guess what? It pains me to tell you that we're out of time.
Yes, we're out of time.
That's a terrible
point.
No, it's terrible. That was a bad one. I'm sorry.
That was what it needed to be, though. Anyway, to be continued.
Painful
or not.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year,
you guys. All those stories and more, theberkshireedge.com, theberkshireedge.com. And we'll speak to you guys next week.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That is this week on air, actually, the Berkshire Edge on air. Right here on Robin Hood Radio.